There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This pod, because everything has a Wikipedia page, doesn't it? But this podcast probably doesn't.
Not yet.
Like a silken whift, she drifts through society, oblivious to Nugent's crusty bread and defibs. I don't know where that was going really with that, but what here she is.
What you're saying is she's a complete enchantment.
And absolutely. Well, that's it. You said it in one word. Who is it?
It's Melanie C. Melanie Chisholm. It's so lovely to have you.
I had more, actually.
Oh, did you?
Her talent flying rampant yet. That's nice, isn't it?
Yes, like, playing that.
She strides with vigour towards the sun.
I love that. You know, obviously, throughout my career, I've had many, many introductions, but nothing like that.
But none that would bring you to tears like that. And I can see you
absolutely
weeping now.
I do feel emotional. Most of them are quite Wikipedia-esque.
Oh, just ladies and gentlemen.
Which
that is
not.
Oh, really? Oh,
what, she done this?
She runs
around yelling girl power.
Yes.
Did
you know you have this many, you know, world records and number ones with the Spice Girls? Yep. Of course I do.
And is the Wikipedia accurate or is it just half accurate, do you think?
Some of it surprises me. I think people go on it to have a bit of fun, don't they? And put some really random bits and pieces
Wikipedia.
On.
Wikipedia?
Yeah.
I've never actually looked at mine, ever. I've got no interest.
Well, I wrote it also.
Can you attach lies to it yourself?
I think anybody can access it and add to it.
Yeah.
So obviously people do it
basic
for entertainment.
So I could put a
load of old tosh made up by anybody.
So I could put a load of fiction in about myself.
Yeah.
I actually think you should write your own. I think that'd be quite fun.
No, it's making me think I might have a look.
You should have a bit, it should be written in your introductory style. Anyway, should we go back to our guest, who is an enchantment, an incredibly talented and wonderful person. Now, I know, for instance, that you quite like, you like exercise,
yes.
You know, but are you keen on travel?
I am keen on travel, but it's a funny thing, isn't it, being a musician, when you're able to travel, because I find most of the travelling I've done has been for work. So I could do it a bit more leisurely travel, you know? And I have taken many forms of transport.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not that into cars, like I appreciate them. But yeah, my car's 14 years old and everyone takes a piss out of me and I love it and I can't part with it.
Who takes a piss out of you with a 14-year-old car?
Well, my brother is really into cars. He was a racing car driver.
What sort of racing car?
He was in the British Touring Car Championship. But he's driven in lots of different cars and now he presents on that and he does lots of coaching for young drivers and works with different manufacturers. So he's a proper petrol head.
But there's lots of other forms of transport. Are you keen, for instance, if somebody said, oh, well, you've got to go somewhere, it's a boat, a train, a plane, a walk, a cycle. What sort of things do you like?
I'm really enjoying my bike at the moment. Of course, we're in that glorious time of the year when cycling is pleasurable. Mm. I'm a fair weather cyclist, but I've done a few triathlons, so I do like to get on my bike and I'm actually doing a race, which is quite ridiculous. I'm doing something, it's to do with the Olympics, and there's lots of different people who are doing this virtual race. And I was invited to do it, which I thought would be really fun. I did one last year and there were some athletes, some ex-athletes and some celebrities. And it went really well. I came third. I was very pleased with myself. But this time round, I've just realised that it's just athletes and me. And I think sometimes...
Well, that's a bit unfair. Get them to sing a song, say how well they do with that.
Yeah. I think people get a bit confused because I'm called sporty that they actually think I am.
And you're
really
not.
Sporty. So it's like Paula Radcliffe, Sir Chris Hoy, and James Cracknell, and me.
You should say in your Wikipedia, it was supposed to say spotty. So did you, when you were a young girl, did you go around on a push bike then?
Do you know what? I didn't cycle much as a kid. I did. I remember falling off my brother's BMX. I've got quite a big scar on my knee, which reminds me of that day, that fateful day.
Tell us about the incident.
Yes, was it your first cycle ever?
So I always wanted a bike. I mean, we didn't have much as kids. And I always wanted a bike. And he got a BMX.
Oh.
I wanted a chopper.
Yeah.
But I think I ended up with like a kind of fakeish wannabe chopper.
Was it a tomahawk?
It was a tomahawk and it was gold.
Yeah.
Oh, nice colour.
That was like the lesser. The lesser spotted chopper.
Absolutely. That is what I'd had. And I feel like maybe this was my blue rally, had like a butty box on the back, you know, like a plastic white box. But I did love my bikes. He had a BMX and I was riding it on the back alley behind the houses opposite where we grew up. And it was quite, what would you call that?
Shingly,
it was quite stony
sort of,
and
gravelly.
And I did like a bit of a skid and ended up, taking off the top of my knee.
Have you still got the scar now?
I do, yeah. It's a killer. Do you know, I was just about to start secondary school. So I remember I was in your first year, which is now year 7, isn't it? And on my very first day, I had to go and see the nurse because I had to have my dressing changed.
Oof.
So I have like really vivid memories of that whole experience as well. When you're a kid, you're just so fearless, aren't you? And I remember like walking up with the bike to the steepest hill we could find and then flying down it. And it was, you know, this is a road as well. There could have been cars coming. Like now I don't like going downhill. I'd actually rather go uphill.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'd rather just go stick on the flat. But I remember when I was a kid, there were some factories near us and we used to take our bikes up onto the roof, and it may have been a mattress factory or a donut factory, something soft. But we used to ride on our bikes off the end of the factory and our bikes would go flying forwards and we'd drop onto some softness. I can't remember what it is. May have been marshmallows.
Maybe. I'm trying to have a clear out, and then so I've got all these things in the hall, and I think, oh, I can't clear that out. Oh, well, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the thing goes in the box and it goes back in, and you put it, well, where's I going to put that? And in fact, it's led to the idea of having a clear out is literally just a mess everywhere.
Yeah.
Don't get involved. That's what I say.
Do you ever think about things like that? That when I perish, it's all my stuff going to be sorted through and people are going to find all this rubbish and what are they going to do with it?
Well, we've been planning that, Melanie and I. And what we're going to do is we're going to be putting it on... you have four oxes pulling a great cart and we put it on there and we take it to a great pyre and then we drink very delicious wine with incense, we circle it and then we set light to it.
Oh, so it's a ceremonial...
burning, yeah.
Yeah, because I was thinking of tipping all my stuff over a cliff.
Well, unless it's any value and then we might take it to the auction.
I'll find the nearest quarry.
But it is incredible how much crap you keep, isn't it? And I always do that thing, when I'm having a clear out, I think, right, I'm going to be ruthless this time. Like if you're moving house or something, you go through everything, don't you? And then you look at something and you haven't obviously used it for like 2, 4, 5, 10 years, whatever. But you never know, you might need it. You go, you know what? I've not used it. I'm going to get rid of it. But then a week later, you need it.
Exactly. So
how does that always happen?
Well, the feng shui people say, of course, you look at it, or there's a feng shui, there's a woman that writes these books.
Is it Marie Kondo?
I think it is, exactly. And she says, you've got to look at the object and then you've got to think, is it beautiful? Do I love this object? Does it serve a purpose? Well, that's all very well, but something like what you're saying, which is what I find all the time, like that old safety pin, it's not really beautiful, I don't really need it, but maybe next week I will.
So
you're a hoarder.
Yes, I am.
I am too. But that's, if that safety pin's got a sentimental value, you know,
but somebody told me that the big trick was your place for everything, and if it doesn't have a place, stick it in the bin.
What about having an open burglary day? If you know that you know.
Now that's a good idea. Come round and help yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a good idea.
Yeah.
In Feng Shui, going back to that, I just here's the other tip, was I was reading about mirrors. I don't know if you have mirrors in your where your placement of mirrors are, but apparently they mustn't reflect something that's untidy. It doubles the untidiness vibration.
So you don't have any...
To the point where if you've got a wardrobe door and there's a mirror on the inside of it, if when the door is shut, your clothes are all hanging untidily, then the vibrations while you're sleeping are bad.
Well, I've also heard that you shouldn't have a mirror facing you when you sleep.
Oh, wouldn't surprise me.
I think something about reflecting bad thoughts or, bad dreams or
because
something.
You might inadvertently step up and walk in through it to the underworld.
Well, that's a journey.
Yeah.
The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. I used to have on the inside of my wardrobe, I had a mirror on the outside, but on the inside I had a picture of Jimi Hendrix, which I used to use as a dartboard. And I love Jimi Hendrix, but... You know, do you remember your early wardrobe?
Your early wardrobe, and who was on your wall?
On my wall, one of my first posters was Adamant.
Oh, nice, yeah.
Child of the 80s. And then Madonna featured heavily. Yeah, not that many posters.
See, my daughter's 15, and on her bedroom wall, she's got pictures of The Who and the Sex Pistols.
Wow.
And,
that's like your age, having people like sort of Fred Astaire on your wall, isn't it?
Yeah, but who did you have on your wall? Little Richard?
Arthur Askey. I tell you what I did have, which I was really... I don't know if this is my tip. Maybe either of you would try this. And I thought this was such a good design idea. I cut out the letter Z, about 10 letters.
Is this in your bedroom?
In my bedroom.
Yeah.
And one letter Z was, say, like the size of my hand, and the next one was like a bit bigger than that, and bigger and bigger and bigger, until eventually the biggest Z that I cut out was maybe sort of as big as my arm. And then I stuck them above where my pillow in my bedroom wall was in a way so it looked like when I was asleep. Well, you know when you get in a cartoon and somebody's going zzz and they're asleep? And I thought that was a really great thing. And then I think my mum said, well, you've ruined the wallpaper by this particular. And I thought it was one of the best things that anybody had ever done.
That's a very good idea.
And I should imagine that's in a feng shui, however one says it, kind of way. That's probably quite good.
That is a feng shui. That is proper feng shui.
Yeah.
What, sort of putting the Zeds on the wall?
Yeah, because then you're going to have a good sleep. I think that would entice a good sleep, having the Zeds.
Yes. On my bedroom wall, I had Justin Bieber, and what is strange was he wasn't even born.
But I suppose people have always, in the 18th century, they probably must have had something on their wall, mustn't they?
Yeah, an anecdote. Well, a stitched anecdote now on people's walls. You get things like wake up and have a great day, that sort of stuff. But then it would be all
you
stitched.
You don't have to be mad to be work here, but you don't have to be that.
But
in those days, in 18th century, a stitched thing,
yeah,
yes.
It'd be nicely stitched above, yeah.
Home, sweet home. So what about walking? Wait a minute, let's go back to the cycling, Melanie. When you cycle, what sort of routes do you like? Do you have a particular clothing that you wear for cycling? Deerstalker, tweeds?
Yeah. Well, I'm one of those people, I'm a little bit all in. I can't, you know, you see like casual people on a bike. You know, I have to wear all the gear, you know, all the gear, no idea.
Lycra?
Oh, the kit, yes.
Were you wearing it now, actually?
I am. I'm in cycling shorts right now, aren't
yeah.
I?
Nice.
I'm just, you know, always sporty. So, yeah, so I will wear all of the gear. I mean, I think the thing is, if you're on a road bike, and cycling in London is quite petrifying.
Yeah.
But I do find, I used to cycle in London a lot more before I became a mum, and then I just got a little bit more safety conscious.
Yeah, it makes you feel more safety aware, that's right.
Yeah,
do you have an electric bike or a standard issue?
I have a standard issue, but I do like those little bikes you can just get on the street, you know, the little electric ones.
Yeah.
I think they're Lime bikes now, aren't they? Which are brilliant, if you get a good one, because they're supposed to just help you along, aren't they? There's a little bit of electric to like push you up a hill or away at the lights. But if you get one that needs to be repaired, it's just like riding a really heavy bike.
So that's probably good exercise.
I like the fold-up ones, but I just don't like the look of them. I like the idea, but I don't like... I want a big wheeled... Can you get a big wheeled fold-up one?
A penny farthing fold-up.
I was visualising a fold-up penny farthing then.
Right, because the fold-up ones have little wheels, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I know exactly.
Is it called a Brompton? Is that one of them?
Yeah. That's it, yeah. But I like the... You know, I'd rather have a big wheeled bike.
Yes. You mean big as in fat wheels?
No, no, just like full size. I don't know what they call 18-inch wheels.
26-inch, 24-inch.
Folds enough. Yeah. Anyway, forget about that. Yeah. That's just too dull.
Your dreams.
Yeah, but in my dreams, I'll have a large-wheeled, fold-up bike. It's a dream I have every night. Right. Give us three really exciting things that have ever happened to you at a bus stop.
Oh, my goodness. Well, of all forms of transport, I think buses are my least favourite. I think it's because I had to take a lot of them as a kid. A funny bus story, in Spice World the movie, which Jules and I co-starred in together.
Because it was on the bus, wasn't it?
We had a bus.
Yeah.
And a lot of that script actually was taken from things that had really happened to us, like through our crazy year. And we did like a competition winner's thing on a bus around London, like an open top like sightseeing tour bus. And at that time we were so heavily protected, we had security everywhere we ever went, but we were, you know, it was just so oppressive that we said, let's just run off the bus. And we did, and we just ran off, and you know, we came back as all good, you know, little runaways.
Where did you run off to?
I think we just did it to kind of freak them out. We just I think we were going over one of the bridges, and then we just had a little runoff somewhere. But then we put that in the movie.
I mean, people, you know, when they go around tour around America, because they live on tour buses, don't they? You know, that's quite I've done that. That's quite a strange sort of world to be in, this isolated, great big railway carriage, almost like a Silver Eagle bus, which goes on and on and on.
Oh, those ones in America that they kind of extend.
Yes.
When you park out, they're insane. But the funny thing is, I think when you've been on lots of tour buses, you take them for granted, like everything. Mm. You know, they're pretty amazing things.
They are amazing
things.
Bits of technology, really.
Yeah. But when you're having to like sleep on one and then get up and then perform and then go back and sleep on one again, and so many musicians really snore, and everyone likes to have a couple of bevvies, don't they, after a gig, which really enhances the snoring. So they're not always the best places to get a good kip.
No, I think that's right. Yeah. It'd be quite a good thing to have a holiday in. Like you say, like if you were doing it and weren't doing a gig, you just sort of went around one of those in a holiday, might be quite nice. I did once on a tour bus in America with Squeeze, and it was out in the desert somewhere, and the driver said, we're going to stop for fuel now, if anybody wants something to eat. And they'd all had breakfast, but I hadn't. So I said, oh yeah, I'll just get something to take away. So he's filling up with fuel, so I wander in and I get this piece of chicken wrapped up in cellophane. I thought, oh, that'd be nice, you know. So I wander back to the bus, think it was a nice day out here, very hot and it's like on this deserty landscape, and get on the bus. I'm trying to open the chicken and I can't open the plastic, and it's becoming more and more frustrating, and I can't, and I'm hungry and I can't get this plastic open. So I just lose my temper with the packaging, which is very unlike me, but it just drove me mad, and hurled the chicken down the down the bus. And somebody said, what's the matter with that? I said, I can't open it. They said, well, what are you going to do? I said, I don't, I can't open it. They said, well, get it off the bus. I said, yeah, get it off the bloody thing. So I picked it up at the where the door had opened, you know, the door had opened, and kicked it with a sort of a professional sort of footballer's kick. Missed the chicken, and with tremendous speed, my loose footwear came off, and my foot, at a tremendous velocity, hit the edge of the door, and the edge of the door went between two of my toes at probably approximately 100 miles an hour. Exactly. And what's more, the chicken still isn't open, at which point I got the chicken, got off the bus into the car park and started, and got it on the floor and was kicking it and punching it and was lying down and just hitting it with my fists, screaming and waving. And I looked up and the bus had driven off about 50 yards and it was just bibbing the horn waiting for me.
And then somewhere in the desert around Phoenix, maybe, there is a missing Chelsea boot, a Beetle boot, maybe, or a Jesus sandal.
A high heel,
lodged, stuck in a cactus somewhere.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Are you a keen tourist? Do you go and see the sights when you're around?
Not so much, you know. I think I did a lot when I was younger. But now I quite like going to places and going more to like local spots. Do you know what I mean? Trying to find the hidden treasures and things like that. Those big touristy places, yeah, freak me out a little bit. Too many people.
What sort of a small hidden treasure would you like to... is your ideal dream find?
Well, for me, a lot of travelling is about the food. So I love going to places in Asia. That's probably my favourite cuisine. And then going to places where the locals eat. You know, getting a real taste of the place. Yeah.
Yeah, nice. I mean, it is great. What a great thing being on tour. And because you sort of see the world and taste the world and everything, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. And it's one of the things throughout, you know, the difficult year and a half that we've all had, that it's really made me stop, think and reflect about all the wonderful things about what I do. Because, you know, for so many years, I've thought it's about performing. You know, it's about being out there. It's about making music. It's about making people happy. And then you just think about things. Things like getting away from your family.
all the best bits.
Hotel rooms. And the travel and the culture and all the other things you experience along the way.
I think that's half of it that people don't realise. That's why you're going to play music, I think.
Why did you go on holiday when you were a kid?
My dad was a travel rep when I was a kid.
Really?
So, yeah, I was really jammy. He worked in France and Spain. So for the whole 6 weeks in the summer, I'd go away. And I'd do little jobs and help him out. And I absolutely loved it.
Did he drive there?
Yeah. This is a funny story. It's funny to me. So he was kind of like, he looked after a region. So I think it was the Costa, it was either Costa Brava, Costa Dorada in Spain. So he'd go around to all the like the campsites. And so we'd be out for the day. It was like a little day trip with my dad. And he was driving his boss's Range Rover. And we had the window down and the weather's great and we're driving along. When we got to the destination, the, would you call it the sun visor bit?
Yep.
Had disappeared. And at some point, it must have flown out of the window, but neither of us...
No one spotted it.
No, it realised it happened. So then he had to take it back to his boss, sun visorless.
No.
Yeah.
But I hope he blamed the children.
How weird, yeah. It's probably my fault.
Yeah, I think Melody ate it.
Because you'd been in Liverpool... Did you go to Wales on holiday? Because people in Liverpool always go to Wales on holiday,
yes,
don't they?
Yes, they call it the Scouse Riviera, don't they?
So how about... I'll go on to this last bit of transport here. What about boats and trains? Do you like boats or trains?
I do. I like them both. You know, I'd like to do the Orient Express. You know, those fancy old-fashioned trains where you like have lovely food and...
I like the idea of that, but the only thing is that it's you're then... in an enclosed space with the same people for sort of...
Well, that's how I feel about cruise ships. Freak me out.
Have you been on one?
I've worked on one. Everything I've ever done, it was work. So I've only been on one for a night. But the thought of being... Because they're like a village or even like a town on the sea, aren't they? Being with that many people...
What did
again,
you do
that you can't
it?
Escape. I was... It's really funny, actually. I was singing, so I was performing with my band... And we were, it was, I don't know if you ever have this, Jules, but I'm always a surprise. Like when people book me for events, if it's like lots of corporate events, and they're like, oh, stay in your dressing room because you're a surprise. It's like, why am I always a surprise? It means I can't go and have a look around. You know, I'm on a cruise ship. I've got to stay in my cabin.
Well, you're not advertised then?
No, it's a surprise.
Oh, so it's
if
a
it's
surprise
someone's booked
guest.
Me for, yeah, for some event.
I would hate to be a surprise guest though, because... I know that there would be like sighs of disappointment when it turned up on.
Well, that's what always concerns me, especially because you get your big intro, and of course it's all very Spice Girls heavy, and then I turn up and they're like, oh, that one.
And it's not.
She's my middle favourite one. I was really hoping.
It's dangerous to be a surprise,
it's
isn't it?
It's awful, isn't it?
What if you are a terrible disappointment to everybody?
I was once. I did a Volvo lorry driver's convention and I turned up and it was just like a heaving gasp of disappointment as I stepped on. And they were all like, you know, 70-year-old lorry drivers and their wives who had been really happy maybe
having their dinner until you came off.
Well, yeah, they were. They were having a really nice time, and then I was introduced, and immediately felt like it was a huge disappointment to everyone.
But I think that was your. I think that's your perception. They were probably really loving it. But you got to remember the way some people show their surprised face. And I should advise you this too, Melanie. You're thinking, oh, they're not very pleased to see me. But some people's look of surprise is very easily confused with disappointment.
Maybe they were pleased, and all the bottles and glasses that I deflected from were a show of approval.
Many years ago, I did a little tour and I was supporting Meatloaf, but Status Quo were playing as well. So at the bill, it was me, Status Quo, Meatloaf. Such a very random, isn't it, to have me there those guys? But we did this big stadium in Dublin. It might have even been Croke Park, actually, where I played with the Spice Girls. And when you're the first act on, you know, people are milling in. There's not that many people, but you've got your fans, you know. But right in the middle, two people at the front, Quo t-shirts on, arms folded, just looking at me with disdain, waiting for the Quo. And it's such a funny thing to do, isn't it? Because you think, one, you're waiting for Status Quo.
Yeah.
Two, just bugger off. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
It's rude, isn't it?
Stand in the middle. It's so weird.
Did you say anything?
I probably did. I think on stage sometimes, it kind of depends on the mood you're in, doesn't it, and how you're feeling. But sometimes I will be a bit mouthy on stage. If people are rude in the audience as well, that really gets my goat.
I could have said to everyone, so these two people want to see Quo, so if everyone wouldn't mind leaving, we'll go and do this somewhere else.
Yeah.
It's good training, though, I think.
It's good. These experiences make you better at what you do.
There was a fellow when a very early Squeeze in 1976 or something, were supporting Curved Air. And we walked onto our own footsteps, and they weren't really that keen to see us, but they were sort of putting up with us, you know. And there was a man about three rows back from front. I say man, young blokes that were sitting around about three rows back. And throughout our whole performance, he would intermittently with his arms were either both fully up, extended, with two fingers at the end of each arm, just constantly gesturing towards us, or gesturing absurdly overly big yawning gestures. and for the whole of our 20 minutes, sort of, we had 30 minutes separate, and it really was quite a footy. But then afterwards, as we did then, we went into the bar, and there he was.
Right, doing the same thing.
No, he wasn't doing that then, but like there he was. It was like, hang on a minute. And one of the people in Squeeze, I shan't name names, was so delighted to see him there, he immediately ran at him and knocked him onto the floor. I mean, he didn't hit him or anything, but he just sort of rugby tackled him onto the floor.
Have you ever had anything thrown at you on the stage?
One of my first gigs as a solo artist was V99. And I'd made this album, my first solo record. I was so excited, couldn't wait to get out there with my band. And I think I was a little bit naive, actually. And at the time, because I think V Festival became quite pop friendly through the years. But back then, I mean, I think I went on after Faithless and Manic Street Preachers were headlining. So it was quite a strange lineup, and I was positioned really weirdly within it. And I had bottles of things, and I in my memory there's a Weetabix, but I don't know how you throw a Weetabix because they're quite light, aren't they?
That's a nice thing to throw, isn't it?
Yeah, halfway through a gig, nothing at all, thank you.
you should have, as you're going in, say, if you're going to throw anything, there's Weetabix and Shreddies, Sugar Puffs here, do that. If you're going to throw anything.
I don't know why that stays in my memory. There was a Weetabix.
I mean, years ago in the punk days, Squeeze toured with Eddie and Hot Rods.
Oh, what was the singer's name?
Barry Masters. And he would often come on with a pint, which he'd then put at the front of the stage. And I think he played the harmonica a bit and he'd dip it in the pint to keep it sort of moist. And then he'd drink the pint as he was going on. And we were doing these tours and they were around the top ranked clubs, but they didn't have seats in them. And it was like all the sort of youth would be standing up. And it was exciting, you know, to do them. But he got really cross because every night he'd go on stage and he'd put this pint of beer down by his monitor at the front, and every night he'd do it, but he'd come back and somebody would have drunk it. He'd say, oh, it's just driving me mad. That my
and
beer, isn't it?
The harmonica.
Yeah, he swallowed the harmonica. You know, and I think anybody might have suggested to him, well, why don't you put the beer right kind of back a bit at the sort of back of the stage, but nobody did suggest that. So instead, what he would do was use the pint glass, he'd be drinking some beer before the show, and use the pint glass as a receptacle for his pre-gig relieving himself.
Shit.
No. No, piss, which could easily be mistaken, of course, for a pint of beer.
Oh, no, actually.
He would then leave that at the front of the stage, and he did this for quite a few nights, and remarkably, it always got drunk.
Oh, my God. Whoa.
Yeah, but that's a way to treat. So that's getting back at the audience. I thought, well, it's not a battle here. We're just trying to be.
Who was it who was drinking? Who drank it? You.
No. I remember I did. This is so bizarre. I was in LA actually working on that first album, and a friend of mine introduced me to Steve Jones from the Sex Pistols. And at the time, he was working with two of the guys, ex Guns N' Roses, and a bass player from Duran.
Yes.
John Taylor.
Yes.
Yeah. And they were called the Neurotic Outsiders. And they had a residency on the Viper Room on Sunset. And they invited me to go down and sing a couple of songs. So I went down. I think I sang a couple of Pistol songs. And all the audience were going mad. And they were all sticking two fingers up at me and spitting at me. And I thought, oh, my God, they hate me. And they were like, no.
So they,
in punk, yeah, that's a sign of affection.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, that's I was going to say, you missed that. We had that. I mean, Squeeze used to have that at first. All the gobbing. It was like they really love you if they're all gobbing at you. But people have forgotten those. Little golden moments.
You couldn't do that these days, could
no,
you?
No, you really couldn't.
No.
Such a shame.
Yeah.
Sure, but I like the idea of throwing Weetabix.
If you were going to have any breakfast cereal thrown at you, which one would you prefer?
Shredded wheat.
It would be shredded.
Well, it
Why?
Depends. Well, it's lighter, isn't it? I'm thinking about, you know, being attacked by
I
something.
Quite like the idea of sugar puffs, but it'd be a nightmare trying to get out of your hair afterwards.
You know, on a sweaty night, you'd end up with sugar puffs all over your face.
I'd quite like Bircher muesli.
Do what?
Bircher muesli.
You would.
I do remember when we were on tour in the US in 98, the Spice Girls, and we were doing lots of the outdoor, are they called amphitheatres? They do those big, you do those big funny barn things, don't you? And there was these weird insects. You know, they have like, you know, America's just such an incredible country, isn't it? There's so many different climates and things going on there. And there was these big, I want to say locusts. They obviously weren't locusts. But I just remember being on stage. And of course, you're singing songs. So you're opening your mouth. But you were trying to avoid swallowing these huge insects.
Mm. Well, I should say that, curious enough, the next time that happens, it's the only time when I've seen something curious in a film. I might have told you this before, but I must tell you this now because it might work if you're in that situation again. Squeeze were in a similar situation in America and the insects were coming, and I realised, and I'm blowing my own trumpet here because it's the only time anything like this has ever worked, when you see it in a film and then you do it, I realised it was the lights that were making the insects come towards us. And about a week before, I had seen the legendary film The Night of the Lepus, and a lepus is a rabbit. And it was basically this story where this bloke was doing experiments and rabbits grew to be the size of a room or sort of the size of great beasts and were sort of munching their way across the country and everything. It was quite hard to make a rabbit look menacing and frightening, but that was the idea of the film. Anyway, to get rid of the rabbits at the end, as they approached this small town and were going to devour it, what they did is all the people got their cars, turned their headlights on, and the rabbits came towards the headlights, is what they do, and then they turned the railway tracks on and they all got electrocuted, and that was how they sort of... So in this particular instance, I turned this fantasy film into reality and said, there's a lot of people, I saw you all park your cars, if anybody could go to their cars, just put their headlights on, and if we turn the lights off here, all the insects... And they did. It was unbelievable. It actually worked. Because I was having the same thing. There was like insects as big as my head trying to get in my mouth.
Yeah.
Sort of things as big as my hand landing on top of my hand and
so
trying to play
the piano.
They
all went to the cars.
They all went to the cars, yeah. Then the cars... And then everybody went home and had flat batteries because they left their headlights on.
Oh, nobody went home.
Anyway, Night of the Leapers. Yeah. There's quite a good scene where a rabbit goes into a doll's house room trying to look... It's trying to look frightening, but it just doesn't really...
Yeah, I'm not going to watch that film.
I might give it a miss.
I think you'd be doing the right thing.
Anyway.
Rabbits are quite menacing.
Do you think?
Have you ever had a rabbit?
Yeah, but never not menaced by
I think mine was possessed. It was dead cute when it was little, and then it got really, really big and got really angry.
It wasn't from
those
night.
Pink eyes. It was a bit menacing.
It could have got myxomatosis from the Night of a Lepus. But when you say it was angry, how did the anger show
manifest
itself? Like road rage or anything?
It was. Well, if you tried to pick it up, it would really like kick its back legs and really scratch you up.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Wasn't happy. Maybe because I didn't clean it out enough.
What was it called?
Fluffy.
Well, what
it
you
was my first pet.
What you could have done with Fluffy is put the headlights of your car on. And add a little electric wire and sort of...
Yeah, my brother found it quite stiff.
Well, there we are.
Yeah, there we are. And on that sad and depressing note, the death of Fluffy, we'll say thank you and goodbye.
Thank you so much.
The wonderful Melanie Chisholm. Thank you.
Well, there she goes, drifting away like gossamer on a breeze.
Yes, and enchanted in the lovely chopper bike that we gave her that she always dreamed of having child.
No, the tomahawk.
Yeah, but no, we've given her a chopper because she always wanted a chopper, but got the tomahawk.
Yeah, I forgot to tell you, we ran out of choppers. I had to give her the tomahawk.
Another disappointment.
This podcast was produced and edited by Molly Stewart.
Sound engineers were James Stewart and George Latham.